We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is Tyrese Haliburton, and you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Indiana, home of Pacers basketball.
Miller for three, and he got it.
Legends have been born.
Miller retreats to the three-point line.
Memories have been made.
Haliburton, a deep three for the lead.
Bam, baby!
Great basketball has been played.
Nembhard away. Hits a three at the buzzer to win the game.
In 49 states, it's just basketball.
Flips it to the big fella, fake shoots, and hits!
But this is Indiana.
Flips it down.
And you're listening to Setting the Pace.
Let's go!
Your go-to Pacers podcast.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci. Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
We got Pacers hooping. Let's talk stats. Hot takes. All facts. New topics. Updates. Three-pointers. Fast breaks. We keep scoring. We don't need to stop. New episodes. Weekly drops. This your number one podcast. Sweeping every team. We gon' need a mop.
Setting like the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Setting the pace with Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Fauci.
Alex and Allison.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to another episode here of your go-to Pacers podcast, Setting the Pace. The Indiana Pacers fall to a depleted Cavaliers team, 108-103, as they gave this game away multiple times throughout the game, really, by just how they played, and it was just a very frustrating loss once again, and we're here to talk about it today on Setting the Pace. Fauci, how's it going?
Not good. Not good. I mean, this was tough. We've been through some rough losses, but I just feel like this was just a really frustrating loss. I mean, you can go in a couple different directions. The amount of players, or, you know, all-star caliber players that Cleveland was without, having a 15-point lead, you're at home. It just having the opportunity to, you know, all right, hey, you claw all the way back, but to come up short against this Cavs team, a team that if the Pacers are to get the sixth seed, you very well could see in round one. For Cleveland to be able to get this win without a Donovan Mitchell, without an Evan Mobley, it really does say a lot for Cleveland, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I think we really need to start with the head of the snake, and that's Tyrese Haliburton. Look, very dejected tonight in the media room, Fauci, and there was a pretty explicit quote that he had in this one, so I'm just going to say it with the expletives in there. So he just said, "I've never went through a stretch like this in my life. This expletive sucks. It seems like everyone has the expletive answer, but it's about me figuring expletive out." So he's frustrated, and you can clearly see he's shooting horrible from the field, specifically from three. Tried to take over late in this game, hunting mismatches, not converting. Rick Carlisle talked about how he wants the ball in his hands. He wants that pressure, but he's not delivering right now. So It's a fine balance of trying to figure things out, but also getting through this slump. And I know that there's going to be a day when he does break free from this. It feels like right now for Pacer fans, like there's never going to be an end to it. But I am of the belief that Tyrese Haliburton is going to figure things out sooner rather than later. I think acknowledging this to the public, letting the fans understand how frustrated he is, like you can feel that tone of voice, like that frustration. Like he didn't want to answer any questions tonight at the podium. He was relying on TJ McConnell kind of answer everything. And yeah, it was just a really, really tough night for Tyrese, but it's been a really tough stretch for him since the All-Star break.
It really has. I mean, he joked on Paul George's podcast saying that he thinks he, you know, used up all of his makes in the All-Star game because he hasn't been able to hit shots since. I just feel like right now it's good that he is acknowledging this. I think that it's, you know, it's not like he has a major problem where it's like, well, you know, acceptance or acknowledgement is the first step, but it does feel like, hey, this had to happen because the struggles are real. They are real. This is a major slump for Tyrese Haliburton. I mean, since that injury, January 30th, he's shooting 28% from three. That we would kill for 28% right now because it's been far lower than that since. This is actually Tyrese Haliburton right now, I think over the month, is shooting about 15%.
16.9%, Fauci, 11 of 65 from three.
I've never been more excited to be off by a percent because I guess I gypped him a little bit. 16%, you know, but it's just, this is a really, really tough stretch. I mean, 1 of 9 from three tonight. And you start to wonder, like, okay, but like, it's a hamstring injury. Why is that really affecting from three? It's just, I don't know, whatever it is, that burst is not there. And you talked about trying to hunt mismatches. Tonight it felt like whoever Cleveland threw at him, he was having trouble being able to, you know, break them off the dribble or get a good look to any degree. And I think it was really frustrating. Actually, in the third quarter, I don't even believe he took a shot. He had two free throws in the third quarter. And I really feel it. You know, another thing that he said on that Paul George podcast is he always feels like, hey, the third and the fourth quarter is really where he gets his scoring. A lot of times it's a slower first half. He really picks up the second half. It just didn't happen tonight.
Yeah, no, it didn't. And it's just like, you know, you feel for the guy. You really do, because he's shown so much. And he hit that three to cut the lead to six. Massive. In the corner. And it felt like, okay, maybe he can kind of shake loose of this rust. Maybe he will break out of this in front of the fan base.
He had one play at one point.
Yeah, so, you know, he had did you say and one?
Yeah.
On Garland? Yeah, yeah. He had some nice drives, too. I thought he got fouled there at the end of the game when he shot the three.
Well, then we got to get into that a little bit because I'm in full agreement with you. I could live with the when Cleveland challenged and George Niang, they didn't rule it a foul. That was really frustrating to me because I felt like, come on, Siakam, you're a big body. Like, you're really getting pushed out of bounds like that. Okay, I could live with that. That was a horrible no call on Haliburton not getting that foul call on that three-point land because Garland's bumping right into his leg. And I just feel like it's like maybe things could have evened out a little bit right over there. That's a crucial no call.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of the things. And I feel like, you know, early in the first quarter, I even tweeted it out. Like, Haliburton had 5 assists in the first quarter at one point. He might have had 6 before he went to the bench, but at least he had 5. I know that. Mm-hmm. And he had 4 the previous game. So it's like, okay, Tyrese is being a little bit more of a facilitator tonight, getting other guys involved. He's still not shooting the ball particularly well, but the looks have been good. They're just not falling. And I think, you know, sometimes you're just going to go through slumps. And I think that he's mentally fatigued, physically fatigued. And I think everything that he's done this year, like, you know, you talked about the podcast that Paul George and he had. He talked about how he did a great job hosting as the star on All-Star Weekend. But, like, I was talking to some people tonight, and they were just talking about how Miles was just, like, ran across the city for those 3 days. Like, they just, you know, drained. And I'm not going to use that as an excuse of like why they're bad now. I think that has been way too, it's been over a month now or close to it. You can't use that as an excuse anymore. Like, these are young men. They can recover from 3 days of constant, you know, public relation type things. So I'm not using that as an excuse, but I will just say there are a lot of factors that play into why he's not playing well. And there was a lot of questionable things that I thought about tonight during the game. Like, there was a couple times when there was a switch and you had a Miles Turner switched on to Caris LeVert in the post and Turner never touched the ball. And then they put Siakam back in the game finally. And he does the switch and he's got Caris LeVert on him and he could easily take him in the post. Instead, Tyrese wants to be the guy. And I think while Tyrese wants to be the guy, I think when he's also struggling, and this is going to be hard to say, but he has to have more awareness, more self-awareness to say, you know what, I don't have it tonight. Pascal, this is why we brought you in here. You take over the game. But I thought it was very odd that Pascal Siakam did not re-enter the game until the final 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, went with the starters with Obi Toppin instead. I thought that was a very interesting decision.
It was, because, look, Obi had his moments, but, like, come on. I think for Siakam, Siakam got the Pacers off to, I feel like, in that first quarter, a really good start. And he had six shots in that first quarter. I was like, okay, hey, this could be great. Obviously, if that averaged out, it's not going to. You know, he'd be on pace for 24 shots. Finishes the game with 18. I just feel like in a game where you lose by five, I felt like he needed the ball a little bit more. And especially in that fourth quarter while he was out, I think the Pacers could have used him. So I think Rick might have stuck with that lineup for a little bit longer than maybe that we needed. I know for Obi, hey, 10 points, 8 boards, you know, 4-6 shooting, it's good. But come on, he's not going to take some of those big shots that you need down the stretch that Siakam, you know, wasn't afraid to take. So I feel like, yeah, I'm right on board with you. I think that would have been great to get him in even a minute or two earlier than what they did, because we saw this Pacers team tie this game up, and they had opportunities. I felt like in that final minute, it was just a crumble, you know, by Indiana, and it was really tough. They just could not convert the plays they needed to make, whether it was Siakam getting bumped out of bounds or Haliburton not getting that shot or the foul call. That I just felt like they had opportunities, but they just could not convert when they really needed it down the stretch, and that was tough to see.
Yeah, I mean, that last play where the Cavs ended up getting the bucket from Isaac Okoro with 26 seconds left to go by four, that was really just a breakdown defensively of the Indiana Pacers there, because they were trying to double-team Garland at the top. Jared Allen came to set the screen, and they recovered over to Allen at the free throw line. But why? Like, Allen's not a shooter, so you can't leave the weak side open to go cover Allen at the nail, right? So you got to let him kind of just figure things out and let him make the decision, right? You have to kind of force that on Allen, like, hey, shot clock's winding down. You're a center that's not used to putting the ball on the floor. Like, we got to make you make the decision and not allow our team to be such in scramble mode that we allow a guy to get a wide open backdoor baseline cut where Allen found him and he made the Okoro made the 2-point shot. But honestly, I know that people hate when Coach Carlisle talks about this, but I think that he was dead on. Like, and you mentioned it too, that 15-point lead they had in the second quarter, Fauci, they were up 47-32 with 7 minutes and 38 seconds left. They got outscored 22-7 the final 7:38 of the second quarter. They only scored 7 points in 7 minutes. It was atrocious. And it got so bad that Rick Carlisle had to pull Tyrese Haliburton from the quarter, from the game, and put T.J. McConnell back in with like 2 minutes left in the quarter, where Tyrese always finishes quarters out. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was a really telling sign of just the struggles and Carlisle trying not to like bench Haliburton, but he kind of did in that moment.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
No, it was at the point where people thought maybe Haliburton could have been hurt. It was one of those where it was just like people really didn't know, like, oh, what's going on over here? But I think that was definitely a telling sign. But also feel like Indiana, and I talked about this against the Bulls, it just kills me. But it's like, I don't know why, when it comes down to that final possession for the Pacers to end a quarter, they cannot get stops. I mean, it's just Jared Allen made two free throws right before halftime to tie it up. Okay, sure. You know, whatever, it happens. Marcus Morris hits a three right at the end of the third quarter. That when you look at this and it's that tight of a game, you got to get those stops at the end of the quarter because it was crippling. I mean, essentially what happens is, you know, Jared Allen, the final 10 seconds of the third quarter, Cleveland gets, you know, they score 5 points. It was Jared Allen got a layup on it. I think it was a broken down play. And then Marcus Morris hits a three-pointer. And it's just, look at where the game was. Those 5 points, those final 10 seconds, they proved to be really big. And for Marcus Morris, I'm trying to think right now if he even – okay, you know, he had some other best. Yeah, he had 14 points. But that three-pointer, I remember being like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
And then you see where the game ends up, and it ends up being a pretty crucial play.
Yeah, there was even times I felt like, I'm not trying to like hate on Miles Turner or anything like that, but there were some times in this game where Tristan Thompson bullied him down low, and I said, here we are in the year 2024, you know, 6 years removed from the playoff series against Cleveland, and this man was once Miles' teammate, and he still is finding ways to be impactful on the glass against him. And I'm just like, he's 6'9". He's not even that tall of a center, you know. And to me, it just felt like in this game, I don't know if he felt the same way or not, but every single second opportunity went to the Cavaliers. It was
that's what it seemed like.
Yeah, it just felt like every time there was like a ricochet off the rim on an offensive rebound, like the Cavs would get it. Pacers would be out of position. The Cavs would get another opportunity. Then they'd miss that and they get another opportunity. Then all of a sudden, oh, here's a Marcus Morris three at the top of the key. And it was just like every time the Pacers would have a good segment of defense for like 20 seconds, it would end up, you know, not working out because for some reason the Cavs would just got onto all the 50-50 balls. And that was really annoying. But other than that, I think Rick Carlisle also brought up a great point in the postgame press conference, because Rick's not going to throw his team under the bus. He's going to be he said, we got to remain positive. You know, it's a tough loss. It sucks, but you know, you've got a huge road trip that you got to go out here and be very successful. And like, you cannot beat up these guys every day, but like, I thought he said did a great job explaining how the ball did not move tonight. And this team leads the league in assist, and they're best when they're moving the basketball, and it got really sticky tonight, and I agree with that. It felt like they were playing a little bit too much isolation ball, and that's exactly what he said after they lost to Toronto, which it kind of felt reminiscent in terms of how their offense looked at points.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've always said the magic number is, you know, to be above 30 assists. The Pacers were below that. I know it's just 28, but it's like, this is a Pacers team that we've seen have, you know, nearly 40 assists in a handful of games. So, yeah, that's obviously a big difference. When you're going back to your point on Turner had a rough first half. I felt like, yeah, defensively there was issues, but also 1 of 5 shooting. I mean, Haliburton and Turner combining for, you know, 2 of 11 at halftime, is you're actually lucky that the game's tied at that point. I felt like Indiana, just after that first quarter, they just did not bring it. And I felt like Cleveland came alive in that second quarter, like we talked about. And they just, after that, it felt like the Pacers were always playing catch up. And, you know, in this game, it's like McConnell had 10 points at halftime. He led the Pacers. I remember being like, oh, wow, like McConnell's leading us in points. It's probably not a good sign. Finished with 14, so it's obviously a quieter second half. I just felt like overall, this team, they're struggling from three right now. Yeah. Because there was looks. There was open looks. Like Nesmith, Andrew Nembhard, I mean, they both had looks. They combined to go 2 of 9 from three. So if you talk about, you know, Haliburton, Nembhard, and Nesmith from three-point land were 3 of 18, you're not going to be able to get it done. I mean, there was plenty of other guys that were, you know, even Ben Shepherd was 1 of 5, and Jalen Smith was 2 of 7. Love me some Jalen Smith. That man can't be putting up 7 threes in a game.
Yeah.
It's just way too many. Jalen Smith is good when he's going like, you know, 1 of 2, you know, 2 of 3, 2 of 5, I guess, that you could live with. 2 of 7 is like, that's way too many attempts for Jalen Smith.
Yeah, and I mean, if you really just look at the Cavaliers' numbers without Marcus Morris tonight, they were pretty abysmal from the three-point line as well, too. So I don't know if the rims were just a little bit tight tonight, and whoever was doing, you know, gym maintenance before the game, like, just had them a little bit tighter, just trying to give the advantage to the Pacers, but it didn't work out in this instance. No, I'm kidding, obviously, but yeah, it just feels like there's a little in the basket right now. And we pre-recorded an episode for tomorrow that we did on Sunday, and I bring that up talking about the three-pointer stuff, so I don't want to like get too much into it now, since you're going to hear me get more in depth on it then. But like, yeah, you're right, the struggle from three is real. And Rick Carlisle talked about this too after the game, just how the defense kind of generates their offense, and when they don't play good defense, this is what happens. And it kind of felt like they were kind of on the back of their heels all night defensively. They were kind of in scramble mode. And instead of kind of being the dictators, they were being more reactive instead of proactive. And so it's tough. I hate to always talk about losses and just kind of rip these guys, but you know, everybody's like, are we going to have another bad loss? It's like, well, look, at this point in the season, that is who this team is. This is a team that is inconsistent, that will have multiple bad losses throughout the year. The proof is in the pudding. They are not a team that can figure out bad teams. That, you know, Orlando, you got to give them a lot of credit. They beat the crappy teams, and that's what they need to do. Indiana can't do that. So Cleveland's not a crappy team record-wise, but this Cleveland team was without Max Strus, Donovan Mitchell, Evan Mobley, Ty Jerome, and Dean Wade. That's five players, four that are mostly in the rotation.
Yeah.
And they allowed someone that they just signed, Marcus Morris, to kick their butt. Someone that they didn't want in a trade.
Exactly.
That they dealt to San Antonio in a three-team deal to get Doug McDermott. So, yeah. And you know what I will say too, Facci, because there's a lot of questions. We do talk about this a little bit too. But, like, not having Benedict Mathurin on this team right now, it really does impact what Indiana can and cannot do. Because you could see maybe where – Tyrese is in a moment like this where he's struggling. Maybe if Ben's out there, he can generate a little bit more offense for you.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you look at this Pacers team, and it's just, it's a blessing when a guy like an Aaron Nesmith or an Andrew Nembhard gives you 15 or more. I mean, it's amazing. But you can't count on it. And you look at a guy like Obi Toppin, you can't count on him. You look at a guy like Jalen Smith, hey, look, you know, it's great if he can give you what he can give you, but you're not like, hey, you know, this is going to be the Jalen Smith game. He's going to give you, you know, 15 and 10 or something like that. I think Ben Shepherd's not at that point yet where you can count on him. We've talked about this. When Ben Shepherd scores double figures, the Pacers are undefeated. He just hasn't scored double figures more than, I think, five times.
Yeah.
So with Benedict Mathurin, he could at any given night explode for 20 to 30 points. He really could. And when you lose these close games, you're like, you know what? Maybe Mathurin could have had it going. And there was times where he started to actually pick it up from three-point land. And you see right now the Pacers are just – they just don't have the three-point production that they need to have. They have good shooters, but these good shooters are not hitting right now. I don't know what it is. And just to go back to Haliburton for a little bit, because there's not many games left. I want to say there might be about 13 games left on the regular season. Haliburton actually can afford – to miss four or five games and still qualify for all NBA. Can the Pacers afford that? I don't know. You don't want to say that many games. Does this man look like he needs maybe a night off to be, would it do anything? I don't know, but this is such a slump right now that I think you actually have to consider it.
For me, I don't think taking a night off is going to do much. I think he needs a month off. I think he needs some time away from basketball to really heal that hamstring. But right now, you know, there's a lot of people saying in the comments on my Twitter account, you know, like, is he even going to make all NBA? You know, it's like,
there's vicious people out there right now about Haliburton. Like,
yeah, well, I'll be honest with you. I think people that vote always remember the beginning of the season a lot more than the end of the season. That's just kind of how it goes. They do have some recency bias here and there. So he could struggle in the month of March and then play good in April, and they'd be like, oh, he's really good, yeah, you know. Definitely. But I forget who I was listening to podcast, because it might have been Brian Windhorst. It could have been Zach Lowe. It was one of those two. But they were talking about all NBA players. There are so many guys that don't qualify because they don't meet the threshold of the 65 games. So they were all saying, like, Tyrese Haliburton is a lock to be, you know, second or third team. Probably not first, but at least second or third.
Yeah.
And I think everyone's going to put into account that the injury did kind of impact it. So I still think he's going to make it. And that's a big business decision for Tyrese Haliburton, $54 million exactly. So, Yeah. So, I mean, I still think he probably does make it. I would be kind of shocked if he doesn't. Clearly, if he slumps like this for the next 13 games, like you mentioned, maybe there's a little bit more people that push back on that. But I don't think he's going to struggle like this for the next 13 games, Fauci. I think he's going to have one game where he breaks out. It's just tough right now.
He's going to snap out of this. Will he consistently, will he snap out of it and then just be the Tyrese of old? I really do not know. But I do think that there are big performances ahead. I think through at least we could say, hey, look, he got hurt. Yeah, I believe it was January 30th. You could say through February, like at least at the start of February, as through January, that man was a lock for all NBA, like an actual lock. Now I think it's like he should make it, but nothing is a guarantee. And yeah, there are a lot of guards out there that are not going to qualify. A lot of forwards that are obviously are not going to qualify. But it's going to be tough. I mean, a guy like Jalen Brunson has remained healthy, you know, for pretty much the whole year, where I think that it's like, hey, you know what? Now this really opens up the door for Jalen Brunson to be able to make an all-NBA team. So we'll see what happens. But I think that if Tyrese can still turn it around, he could still make all-NBA, but it would be I'm not going to say the biggest tragedy. It would be a big tragedy, though, if Tyrese is to not make all-NBA and the Pacers are to have suffered for it, because they would have really then wished that they could have rested him for at least 1 week at one given point. Maybe, you know, I think it was just that perfect storm of trading for Siakam and him being eager to get out there and coming back and playing a game against the Trailblazers and not working out. And then just all the busyness of All-Star weekend. It's just like, we're going to look back and it's like that perfect storm of All-Star game, being in Indiana, him being busy, going for the All-Star MVP. Everything was just overworking himself. And right now, we got to live with what happened. We got to be able to move past it and just kind of hope for the best. And I think with a guy like Tyrese Haliburton, him really admitting tonight just how big of a slump it is and how he's never been through this before, you know, he's well aware and he's going to do everything he can to be able to get right. But I think that the Pacers need to do everything around him to be able to put him in a good position to be able to succeed, get him that confidence. Because we've heard from Tyrese, if he's not positive, the team's not going to be positive.
Yeah.
It's really important for him to set the tone. And if every missed shot he's becoming frustrated, the team's going to be frustrated. And that is not going to translate to winning games.
I mean, I think I brought it up about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Like, the team needs to lift him up right now. And he's been the guy that's always kind of carried the team. Now he needs his teammates to kind of carry him and lift him. And I think you saw a little bit of that tonight from TJ McConnell. One, by how he played on the court, but also how he was able to kind of be there for the post-game press conference and answer a lot of those questions for him, because you could just tell Tyrese was dejected. He didn't want to be there. He was just – he's just done. He's fed up with this slump that he's going through, and it's been one of the hardest things he's ever faced. And I respect the accountability from Tyrese. You know, it's not like he's running away from his problems. He's very much acknowledging them, and he did say that it's going to be fine. It's going to get better. It's just – you got to stay positive, and it's hard. And he talked about this on the Paul George podcast about how Buddy Hield, when he wasn't feeling it one day, Buddy Hield just would bring it to him. And then, like, there'd be that competitiveness. Like, Buddy Hield would be like, oh, yeah, the bench is going to, you know, beat your butt tonight in the scrimmage or whatever at practice. And so then Tyrese said that my competitive juices would get going because, you know, I didn't want to hear Buddy talking. So that to me is just like, there is an element of that. There's a lot of different things I think that play in a factor here with what's going on with Tyrese. And I know that it's going to be a talking point until he does break out of the slump. And I think people are just, you know, frustrated because they know what he's capable of, and he's not been able to reach that in the last, you know, month or so. But you talked about that game that he came back a little bit too early from against Portland because he was excited that Siakam got traded there. He wanted to play with him. And yes, that is definitely true. But what is more shocking to me is that they allowed him to return, but not only return, they played him 36 minutes in that game, Fauci. And his first game back from the hamstring injury, that looked like, you know, they said they would reevaluate that when he got back from the road trip. So they were ahead of schedule, and they didn't handle it, you know, very cautiously. Now, he has given the medical staff a lot of praise for being the best medical staff in the NBA. And I'm not trying to, you know, put them down or anything like that, but like, I think maybe next time they should be a little bit more cautious how they handle things, kind of handle it with kid gloves, because that's your star player, and they could have really just impacted the entirety of the season because they allowed him to play way too many minutes on his first game back because he was, you know, he was juiced up for Pascal Siakam being there. And I think in hindsight, you know, if they could do it all over again, he misses that game and he comes back against Boston on the national televised game for his first game back. And I think he looks probably a little bit better than he does now.
Look, I'm no doctor. I've told you guys this plenty of times, but they You're made not? A mistake. I am not.
Dr. Fauci? Not.
No, nope, nope. That's an F-A-C-C-I, all right? There ain't no you. But look, here's the thing. It's just they made a mistake. And you never would have thought that it would have had that big of an impact on the season, but it did. And there's very few times that you could really pinpoint something and say, like, that's when the season changed. And that's really where it did. And it's just, I mean, you took 35, 36 minutes. Like, what were they thinking? It would have been one thing if he played 20 minutes. But it's just like for him to be a full go all of a sudden, and we lost, is just like the worst possible scenario of that. And now we're still paying for it, you know, past the midway point in March. So it's definitely tough. It's a tough pill to swallow. You know, we're looking at this Pacers team right now that it's just like, man, I know we beat Cleveland, you know, twice earlier in the year. It's hard to beat a team three times in the regular season, but like you didn't want to look past a hobbled Cleveland team. But this is another one of those games that the Pacers should have taken care of business. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't get easier with the road trip coming up. And with the way that the standings are, it's just so tight that you don't want to look at it, but you have to. And the Pacers right now, they are considered a play-in team, and that is just not where you want to be.
Yeah, I think they did get the best result tonight in terms of the Sixers Heat game. I think Philadelphia winning that game was a sigh of relief for Indiana, because I feel like the Sixers have a tougher uphill battle with who they have left on their schedule and just their inconsistencies as a team. But, you know, Miami, they're a team that, you know, they could easily make it into that, you know, sixth seed if they go on a run because they have the talent to do it. So I think that you got the best case scenario with Philadelphia winning, because that's a team that's not been very good of late. So you can win a game, you already are in the tiebreaker over them too, so it does help you. But yeah, you're right. It's one of those things where it's just one game at a time. You can't say, oh, we got Detroit, then we've got the Warriors. No, you got to look at Detroit. That's it. That's the only team you got right now. It's kind of like I hated this saying that the Colts do, and I said, I don't know if they still do it, but I think it was a Frank Reich thing. They're like 1-0 every week. It was never like, oh, we're 4-7. It's no, we're 1-0 this week. So
classic football.
Yeah, so you got to kind of keep that 1-0 mentality every single game, because you can't look at it as like, oh, man, we got this stretch here. Like, no, you got to take it one game at a time, because anything can happen. Like, I think most fans would have said on paper the Pacers should have won this game.
Yes.
And probably would have chalked it up as a win. I felt like when they were up by 15 points in the second quarter, okay, they mean business. They know what's at stake in this game. They're here to win. And then they just completely shut down the rest of that quarter, and that momentum – trickled into half, and when the Cavaliers came out, they got up by 8 or 10 points in the second or the third quarter, and the Pacers were just climbing up an uphill battle the whole time. So yeah, it was just a really frustrating game, I would say, is a great way to put it, because this is a game they could have won, they should have won, but you know, it was the Caris LeVert, Jared Allen show, the former Brooklyn Nets, you know, 23 points apiece for each of them in this game, and Marcus Morris really was kind of the difference. I think Sam Merrill had some big shots too.
He did.
But a lot of it was just bad Pacers defense that allowed for those shots. And I felt like the Cavs missed a ton of open shots too. I mean, Darius Garland also 1-9 from three tonight, like Tyrese Halliburton. But kind of weird to see Halliburton go 1-9 from three in back-to-back games.
It really is. It just shows that, I mean, it's tough, because it's like you can't really envision someone going like 1-10 or 1-12. It's like at some point you just got to stop shooting the threes. And I think that right now, for a guy who's like, a, you know, been a career, you know, 40% shooter from three, it's just tough to see the struggles like this real. But going back to Caris LeVert, I'm convinced that every time Caris LeVert sees the Pacers, he wants to really just bring his A game. I mean, 23 points tonight, you know, he had like 11 assists earlier in the season, like the very beginning of the season. Actually, what was it? Whatever it was, he dropped 31 points against the Pacers earlier on. Yeah, in October. And I'm just like, this guy just saves a little bit extra for Indiana. And there was a time where I saw him on the court tonight, and I was like, I can't believe that we were in a spot where it was like Caris LeVert was truly looked at as like, he could be the guy. I remember being like, you know what, maybe a fringe all-star. And it's just like, I know that ship has sailed, but I was just happy that the Pacers, I've long moved on from Caris LeVert, and I think that he's kind of settled into being more of like that role player for Cleveland, compared to trying to be our guy in a post Oladipo type situation. But it's just a lot has happened in the last few years.
He was miscast here as the guy, right?
Yeah.
So, he can do it in spurts, but he cannot be that guy for 82 games. And I think everybody knows that he's not an all-star. He's a role player. He's a really good role player that can kind of do things. I mean, nearly a triple-double, 8 rebounds too. Yeah. So, he's just good. I mean, he's good all the time. I mean, it's not just against Indiana. Like, he's a good player. And I think that's why we were so excited about him when they traded for him. Because you're like, oh, with him and Sabonis and Turner and Brogdon and TJ Warren, like, wow, gel. But we barely got to see that team healthy. So that was what was so frustrating about that group. But, yeah, it was funny because there was times tonight when Nimhard was matched up with him, and I thought, okay, we got the trade versus, the trade against each other here.
Yeah, it's true.
So it was a fun little narrative there. Aaron Nesmith had some moments on him. But, yeah, I mean, to me, this was a game that was just won and lost by a couple different things. I think Tyrese Haliburton kind of trying to take over at the end, be the guy, and he just didn't have it. I respect him for trying to be the guy, but it wasn't his night tonight. And I was a little bit puzzled by the rotations. Obi Toppin was a +8 tonight. He was the best plus minus on the court.
He did.
He had some good moments in this game, and he was out there for some of the bigger stretches. But, James Boyd of The Athletic, he did get that quote from Tyrese by asking him about his struggles, and I thought that was a great question. But he also had a great question to Rick Carlisle talking about, how can you get everybody on your team to kind of have the same approach to the game that TJ McConnell has, where he's always consistent every single night. And Rick Carlisle responded, what a wonderful question. And, it just kind of shows you like the type of pro that TJ McConnell is. You never have to wonder if he's going to bring it, whether it's the Bulls, whether it's the Lakers, whether it's the Warriors, whether it's the Oklahoma City Thunder. He plays the same way every single time. And if the rest of the guys can kind of gain some type of, I'm trying to word this right. If they can just kind of understand exactly like what it takes to approach the game that way, that would really help this team be more consistent. So Facci, that's one of my biggest takeaways. I just thought it was a great question too by James. And I thought, Rick acknowledging how great of a question it was worth mentioning just because, TJ McConnell, probably one of the most respected players on this team, that he gets one of the biggest cheers when he enters the game. I agree with James, though. Like, if players could play like him more, wow, this team would be a lot different.
Yeah, I mean, who would have predicted to start this year that TJ McConnell was going to have a career year in a career low amount of minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought that? So it's just like, he is a pro's pro. And I think that, like, guys like Ben Shepherd, I think for years to come, Tyrese Haliburton, they will look back and they'll be like, McConnell was my vet. He was someone that really like looked after me. I learned from, just like I watched his hard work and practice, and he was always ready. It's like you need that on the team. And like, I know the Pacers, brought in James Johnson again, and he's been great off the court. But I feel like for TJ McConnell, you see it on the court. And I feel like that's something that is just, it's always been contagious to the Pacers. He comes in there, he makes plays, it gets the crowd fired up in a way that maybe a James Johnson can't. It gets the players rallied up in maybe a way that a James Johnson can't. So it's great to have a vet, that could be really impactful also on the court instead of just at the end of the bench. And I feel like TJ McConnell, I don't know where this Pacers team would be without TJ McConnell. And I know that sounds like a really bold move, but he's actually been that good for a team that didn't look like they were going to need him at all at one point. I remember coming in the year when we tried to do our minutes rotation. It was like, we couldn't find minutes for him. And he's made it to the point where he needs, the Pacers need like the 20 minutes per night that he's been providing them lately. It's essential.
Yeah. And I will just say this to kind of answer my own question. I think part of the reason why TJ McConnell plays the way he does every single night is because nothing is guaranteed. He's always had to work his way into the spot where he's at, like from going undrafted to being on the Trust the Process 76ers and trying to carve out a spot in the NBA, and then leaving Philly after having a great run there and coming to Indiana and being told, hey, you're going to be our third string point guard. Aaron Holiday is our backup, to taking his minutes. And then this season, similar situation. Andrew Nimhard's our point guard of the second unit, you're just not going to get minutes there. he's out of that, but he just continues to scratch and claw and work his way onto the court because nothing has been handed to him. Everything has had to become, you know, something he has to work for. And a lot of these guys, they've just had everything handed to them because they're so talented. And that's not a knock on them. Like, it's just, that's how it is. Like, it's AAU culture. It's, you know, growing up and being told how great you are 24/7, like being high draft picks, like you're constantly told how great you are, where no one was telling McConnell that. And he had his back against the wall and he had to just claw and figure things out. And so I think he just has more of an appreciation for, like, okay, what I don't have talent wise, I can bring with energy and effort. And some of these guys rely more on their talent than the energy and effort part. And that's where they get kind of lost in the shuffle. So I think that it's a great learning and teaching point because TJ McConnell is the consummate pro. He is definitely what you want your players to play like. You want your young kids to play like, because 100% always has his hair on fire and wants to make sure that he is contributing in every aspect of the game.
And that he does. And it's just, I know for some, I mean, it's like, hey, what are the Pacers going to do with TJ McConnell this offseason? I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried because I just feel like right now, I mean, he's once again proved his value, that if anyone's talking about offering a second round pick, get out of here. All right. Cause it's not going to help this team.
They cannot afford to lose him, Facci. Because
no, they can't. They can't.
It's and off the court stuff too. It's not just the on the court stuff.
I know. That's why it's comical to think of just like, oh, come on, that's the best that you got for a guy that you could make an argument. If he's having a career, he could arguably be in his prime right now. What happens if a team was to give McConnell more than the 20 minutes? So whatever it is, he makes the most of the minutes that he has. And I think that right now, you know, when you look at this Pacers team, they were not, no matter how much they thought, they were not ready to move past McConnell. And I think that he's proved that. But, you know, overall, look, this is it's tough. I mean, this fourth quarter, Pacers, they only gave up 18, but they only scored 20. And they actually had two quarters tonight where they only scored 20. So I felt like for a team that has been explosive offensively this year, they didn't have it tonight. They really did not. 103 points for the Pacers. It's amongst the fewest, you know, points they've scored this season. Only giving up 108 is awesome, but you also got to be able to score some points in the NBA. And I think that tonight, that's not something you would have really expected, you know, out of this Pacers team. Cleveland's been a good defensive unit. We also talked about, hey, being without Evan Mobley, who was a defensive player of the year candidate last season. I feel like that was an opportunity for the Pacers to strike, and strike they did not. Strike out, I'd say.
Yeah, the Pacers had 38 three-pointers attempted in this game, only made 9 of them for 23.7%. And I think, you know, the Cavaliers did a much better job of getting to the free throw line. They had 12 more free throws in Indiana in this game, made 10 more too. So that's kind of a difference in the game there too. Just a lot of different things, Facci. But I really don't have anything else to say. We just got to get right against Detroit, and hopefully that momentum carries over into the West Coast road trip. And that's all you can really hope for at this point. Any final words before we wrap up?
And look, I know it always sounds so dramatic. I'm going to call that game against Detroit a must win. I am. I really think that right now, you know, and anyone can make an argument to say that it's not a must win. I think right now, for just the confidence of this fan base and everything right now, they need to take care of business against a team that they are better than. And lately the Pacers have not been able to do that. And I feel that when you're coming off of a stinker, the Pacers are like a roller coaster. They've responded the next night. They've won one, and then they've gone back to their other ways. You got to take care of this game against Detroit, because we've talked about that schedule is not going to get easy. It's going to be tough when the Pacers are, you know, on the road, you know, out west, and it's going to be rough. But I feel like when you're talking about Detroit and you're talking about Golden State and the Lakers and the Clippers and then Chicago again and the Lakers, everyone's gunning for you. Everyone's going to be coming for you during that stretch, because those teams, a lot of them are fighting for their playoff lives. And I feel like you got Detroit right now that I already mentioned, you know, an episode or two ago. It's not the same Detroit team. They're better than they were earlier. This isn't a team that's going to not win a game in a month. You know, they're starting to put together some better performances. And I think that Indiana, I hope they don't have their hands full, but you gotta win that game.
Yeah, you talk about Detroit's game being a must win, and I understand the urgency for that, but I think, and I know this sounds very cliche, the final 13 games are must-win games, Facci.
Yeah, I mean, they're all big.
I mean, because every loss hurts you in terms of where you're trying to get at in the playoffs. So Tyrese Haliburton said it on Paul George's podcast. We do not want to be a play-in team. They want to make the playoffs. So every game matters, and you know that you have a big win against OKC, and you see this team focused, and it's like, okay, they can do that, but they cannot do it consistently. And that's why I've said everybody that's tweeting, like, when are they going to quit saying this is a tough loss, a good lesson learned? They're going to keep saying it because it's who they are. That, you know, there's no way to say it besides just saying they're an inconsistent team that is going to disappoint you throughout the season with bad losses, but they're also going to get your hopes up when they beat a really good team like OKC on the road. So that is what they're capable of, beating anybody but losing to anybody. And I think you're going to see some big wins the rest of these 13 games. You're going to get excited once again, and there's probably going to be a bad loss, and you're going to be really upset, and you're going to feel emotional about it. But I think it's all going to play itself out. But yes, the Detroit game is a very important game because Detroit's been playing better. But, you know, Cade Cunningham with a huge blunder in that game on Sunday. We talked about it the last episode a little bit, but just like a major bummer to see him take a terrible shot with 10 seconds left on the clock when the game's had just bad late game awareness. They're a young team. They're beatable. They should be an easy W, but nothing comes easy with this Pacers team, Facci. And that's just kind of how it's been the last few months. So they just got to take care of business. I don't care how ugly it is. Like Chad Buchanan said, you got to win some of these games ugly and just get a W in the win column.
Absolutely. I don't care how ugly it is. I don't care if the Pacers got to shoot sub 40% or they win by one, just win, please. So yep. I'm ready to be able to move past this Cleveland game. I'm going to try and, you know, the one thing that I'm home, and we know these Pacers team when they're home, you get to sleep in your own bed. Tonight, I'm hoping I could sleep this one off because I ain't going to have that pep in the step tomorrow, you know, that I've talked about after a win. But I don't want to have that loss linger for too long. So, you know, I'm already going to be, you know, looking to move past this, and I'm on to Detroit.
Let's move on to Detroit and tell the people where they can find us at on social media.
Absolutely. So you can find us on Twitter at PacersPod, STP. You can find Alex on Twitter at HouseGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at underscore FACCI. You can find us on Instagram at PacersPod, STP. You can find us on Facebook at Set the Pace. You can find us on TikTok at Set the Pace. And Alex, tell them where they can check us out on YouTube.
Ladies and gentlemen, please go to youtube.com/settingthepace, a Pacers podcast, where you can find all of our video content there. Like this post-game recap. If you haven't already, please like the video, leave a comment below, and let us know what you think of our conversation. It's a tough one tonight, obviously. Nobody wants to talk about a Pacers loss, but here we are. So we appreciate you guys hanging in there for these 40 minutes of us talking about this team. But with that being said, Facci, if you're hoping the Pacers can bounce back and get this loss behind them and move on to Detroit, then hit me with those three words.
Let's go, Pacers!
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.